This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Trying hard. It's a machinery. Hi, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. You got me there? Today we're going to talk about such an interesting thing. Today we're going to talk about falling in love with unavailable peoples. Yep. Unavailable ones. What is it about people who are unavailable that some people find so attractive? Some people say, you know, if you tell me I can't have it, I'm going to want it. Make it out of my reach, and that's always more desirable. And that's always been in nature, you know. In nature, it was the fruit at the top of the tree that everybody kind of went for. The coconuts up on top to get your essential coconut oil. Well, if you think about it, there are some people who refuse to ever go after anybody who is not a guarantee. I knew men and women who would go out on dates, and they would only go out on dates with people who were significantly submissive or guaranteed or adored them. Because on the other side, this thing about you want only people who are totally available, and then you reject them, okay? So that's one kind, loving totally available people as opposed to unavailable people. Then there's the other side, which is loving unavailable people. Both are extremes. Loving unavailable people, what is it about people that makes them so appealing? What is it about unavailable? What is unavailable? What does it mean? Well, there are many types of unavailable people. Unavailable, meaning unavailable for a true loving relationship. So, we'll say there's one kind, which is the person who is completely out of reach. This is when you fall in love with somebody who doesn't even know you exist. It could be somebody at your work. It could be somebody who's on the radio or television, or, you know, you just fall completely head over heels in love with that person. They've never met you. There's a level of it called erotomania, where the person becomes such an obsession that you just can't live without, you practically wind up stalking them. And you read about this a lot, when, you know, somebody breaks into an actor's home just to kind of get his napkin that he had, or they go through his garbage just to touch something that he or she may have had. So that's one level of unavailable people. And what you get from this is you're obsessed. You're completely obsessed with this person, even though they may have never even acknowledged your existence. You may have met them once or twice. But they don't know about you, and they certainly don't know about your romantic interests, but you are totally fascinated by them. You lay in bed at night and think about them completely. They are your in-home lovers. So that's one kind of unavailable person. Another kind is the person who is declared not available. These are the married and committed ones. They're married, they're committed, and they make a declaration, I am not available, and you could try to pursue them, and they say, nope, I'm sorry, none of that. Could include the clergy, you know. Could be people of, you know, religious dedication who say, I'm committed to God, and nuns and priests, who make their commitment. It could include eunuchs. No, that would be silly. Could include family forbidden people like There may be people in your family that you're very related to, but you don't go out with your cousins or your brothers or your sisters, you know? It's kind of said, nah. But you can still be desperately attracted to them. You still could be in love with them. So that's another kind of unavailable person. So level one is totally not available. Number two is not available by declaration. And then there's number three, unavailable but can be tempted. Unfortunately, when I said that, developing the program to the staff I have here at the DeMel Center, almost everybody said, yes, men. there are men who can be tempted. Not all men can be. Women who can be tempted. A lot of married women having relationships with people on the outside. You know, if you think about the suburban housewife having her relationship, you know, with somebody. I mean, to that person, she is very, very attractive. And very often you'll find people who are gardeners and you know, who do work around the house and the pool boy. Well, you know, they're really fascinated because they fall in love with the status of this married woman. She's got lots of money. And there's a thing called shadow narcissism, which means if you find me attractive, then I'm as attractive as you are. So if you're rich and wealthy and you have a big house and everybody loves you and you will have sex with me, then that makes me as attractive as you are. So unavailable but can be tempted. Now, these are people who you can seduce because there's a part of them that's saying, you know, if you wave the right flag, I'll respond. There are men who like men who are not available. You know, if you think about the straight guy falling in love with the straight guy, it's the only guy you want to go out with. You don't want to go out with other men unless they're straight, and then you want to try to persuade them to go to bed with you. Same thing with women who have this with women of the same sex. You want the unavailable woman, the woman who is straight and you're not straight, you know? Okay. And then another type of unavailability is available for play only. Now, this is the kind of person who is out there, who is in the available world, but they're available only for sex, fun, drugs, rock and roll. You know, rock stars, movie stars, committed bachelors, you know, people in their young age usually. So that's one. They're available for fun only. Then there's the guy who just left a marriage. You know, he just left a marriage and he's out there ready for the party, right? And he's available for fun only. Doesn't want anything committed. And then there are the married folks who, quote, cheat. See, the married ones who go out there and it's kind of, you don't know what your husband's doing. And so you could pick a lover and your husband is out there and he could pick a lover, but it's for lover only. They call it for sex only, for fun only. And they come back, but they're not available to the other person for love. They're only available for play. And then another type of unavailable person is a person who's available for love only. Now, that's a very funny thing because we're talking about intimate relationships and we're talking about falling in love with unavailable people. Now, the unavailable person could be somebody who loves you. Yeah. Now, it's a funny thing. She's gone out with him 7 times and she hasn't slept with him yet. Well, what's wrong with that? Gone out with him 9 times and he hasn't invited her to his house. Well, what's wrong with that? Yeah, they've kissed, but it wasn't much of a kiss. They're like great friends. Available for love only, but no passion, no sex, no real physical contact. It makes you wonder. Guy goes out with a gal? Gal? Is there such a thing as a gal anymore? Can't say girl. Don't want to say woman. Man goes out with a guy. Guy goes out with a woman. Man goes out with a woman. And he takes her out and he says, and then he tries to kiss her and she says, not yet. And it's a not yet relationship. I'm not ready for that yet. I'm not ready to jump into bed yet, she says after this 14th year of their going out. Available for love only, but they madly in love. They get married. No sex. Sex is so infrequent that it barely exists. Available for love only. No sex. No passion. Another form of available for love only is long-distance relationships. You got a guy, he's in Europe and he's in France and he barely comes to the United States twice a year. You're madly in love with him. He's madly in love with you. You never get together. You spend your life as if you're in a committed long-term relationship, but your mate happens to be, you know, in Saudi Arabia doing dental technician work. Because the only place he could find this kind of work. I don't know, maybe he's a Saudi Arabian dental technician specialist. But anyway, so long-distance relationships. Another form of long-distance relationships, my friend, that are a form of unavailable relationship is the internet relationship, where you start talking to somebody on the internet and you get real personal. Real, real personal. I mean, you get real close. You fall in love by email. Yep. Just like the movie. Remember? What was the name of that movie? You've Got Mail, right? Something like that. No, that's not the name of it. Anyway, they fall in love with each other. It's a Tom Hanks movie. They fall in love with each other by email. And you never really want to see the other person because you're afraid they're going to bust your illusion. But you're really in love. You want to have an illusion about this person, and both of you are really aware. And it could be at a big distance. It could be around the corner from your house. You just don't want to see him. So that's another unavailable kind of person to fall in love with, the person who's available by email only. Frequently, people who are not available present themselves as available on internet relationships. I've known quite a few, in this case, housewives who have started relationships with men, making believe they're different than they are. They talk about their name. They send a photo of somebody they're not. And they have relationships with people as a complete illusion of who they are. Imagine the beauty of that. You can invent a character and be the invented character. And you never get down to reality. You never get to reflecting it. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'm a mental health practitioner. I help people find themselves, and most of the place that people get lost is in relationships. Yes, how do you find yourself when you get lost in a relationship? Do you look in the yellow pages? Do you call 411? Do you check your email directories? When you are lost in love, you're lost. So we try to help. You listen to WBAI 99.5 FM and you say, maybe I'll get a tip over there. And then you hear me talking about unavailable relationships and you call your sister and you say, you got to listen. And that's what they do. But luckily now we're streamed. So that means that after the program today, if you are listening and somebody else is not, you could tell them, listen, go to WBAI.org and maybe you could hear the program that was on today. Because everybody knows somebody who's involved in an unavailable relationship. And what happens? They come and they talk to you. They say, he sent me flowers. And he sent me flowers, but I tried to call him, and he said he was going away for the weekend. And I miss him so much, and I never see him on weekends. But then he sent me this beautiful bracelet. You know, and they've got their grief, and they're coming to you, and almost always the advice is dump the bum. You know, almost every time any woman talks about her unavailable man to a friend, the friend is going to say, dump the bum. But that becomes part of the kind of beauty of this thing. Loving unavailable men is usually loving somebody who nobody approves of. Because the way you describe them, nobody would approve of them. And then you love them in spite of all the advice to get rid of the guy. And it gives it an additional little power. You see, your mother says, you shouldn't be going out with him. You shouldn't be seeing him. And there's something about that forbiddenness that makes it even more appealing. When people want advice and they're in love with unavailable men, it's a trap. Because no matter what you say, they're not going to follow. This is Armand DeMille. Another form of unavailable person is unavailable psychologically. They are whacked. W-H-A-C-K-E-D. You ever meet anybody and suddenly she starts talking and she's totally paranoid and crazy or acting in a bizarre kind of way or doing, you know, she's just, you know, I can't stand the universe is going to have, and she's just not here on the planet. You fall in love with her. You think to yourself, if I get them, they'll land. A man who is completely bizarre in his thinking. He sits there and he talks to you day in and day out about the plot of the universe that's coming to get him and how people have thought about him and put cockroaches in his apartment. What? They're not home. They're not here. They're people who are so wrapped up in themselves neurotically that there's no room for anybody else. People who are that obsessed or upset, they don't have room in their mind for a partner. So a lot of people fall in love with them. They say, that's my kind of person. See, the idea here is you think to yourself, they may be unavailable, but if they're unavailable, when they get me and I truly love them, they're going to become available. I know, my friends, that's what you tell yourself. But after a while, you certainly learn differently. Other forms of unavailable, here's one I was told by one of my assistants. These are unavailable because of spiritual reasons. These are the people who go around who are so spiritually connected that they feel they're connected to the universe and they want no single relationship and they say everything is good and they're totally spiritual and they do what is called the spiritual bypass. It means I'm bypassing individual relationships because I'm so spiritual. Why get angry? It's all the same thing. So there's no real connection. Hey, do you know any other forms of unavailable? You're going to be calling in, and we're going to be talking today as well. Here's another for you, unfortunately. Alcoholics, drug addicts. Both are unavailable because they have another date. They have another mate. You know, their first mate, their primary mate, more loyal than most men are to their wives, more loyal than most women are to their husbands. People are loyal to their drugs. If they are alcoholics, they are loyal to alcohol first and you come second. So you fall madly in love with them. Now, the reason part of that they are attractive is because in a way you recognize that they are dependent. And you think, well, there's a person who is not going to leave me. So you fall in love with somebody who is an alcoholic. And then you say, well, they should cut down on their drinking. I met a couple the other day where a man was a very, very heavy drinker. I mean, very. I sat at a table with him, and I watched him drink, down 5 full glasses of wine. Full. I mean, he was told the way to fill them up. And she was limiting him, and they're engaged to get married. And she was saying, you're only allowed 5 units of alcohol at any dinner. And so he would do is make the units bigger, meaning glasses bigger. But, you know, that's what his priority is. You could see it. She's going to try to take him away. She's going to try to steal him from his alcohol. And eventually that's going to cost the relationship. Another form of unavailable person is a person who is available to their career only. Career first, you next. No room for love. I'm busy being successful. Someone once said, I forgot, maybe it was Einstein, said that every person, every man should achieve whatever the height of his life before he gets married. By the time he gets married, he really should have achieved what he wanted to achieve. Because after that, you know, you really would like to switch your loyalties from your career to your mate. Another form of unavailable person is called mamaholism. Yes, mamaholics. Isn't that a good word? It should have an X at the end of it. A mamaholic is a man who's married to his mother. Yep. A mamaholic is a guy who finds his mother, so he is so devoted to his mom, and then you go out with him and you think he's a wonderful guy, and he keeps seeing this loyalty to mom comes first. Mamaholism. And she comes first, and you don't know it. You see it, you say, oh, how wonderful, he has such a deep respect for his mom. Mamaholics frequently live with their mothers. Well, he's age 45, and he's living at home, and he's never moved out, but he's waiting to meet a nice girl, you know? And he lives in the basement, and mom lives upstairs. So they have separate apartments so he could come and go as he please. Yes, she does wash his underwear for him. All right? Equal to mamaholism is papaholism. Yep, papaholics are women who love their daddies, and their dads are alive, and they have such relationships with their fathers that any man is going to come second, even if dad is dead. They compare their men to their fathers. And if a man can't come up to their fathers, they just have no interest whatsoever. Another form is called the parentaholics, or parentaholics. I'm making up these words, by the way. There is no mamaholic. Don't look on the internet for mamaholism, because, well, maybe you'll find it by now. Maybe somebody made it up. Parentaholics are people who put their children in the way of their relationship with their mates. So they become unavailable, and their dedication is to their children. There are men who are now single, who have children, who live for their children, and they are not available to any woman who wants to date them. They are not available. The children come first. They become parentaholics. They're all involved in their relationship with their daughters and sons, usually daughters, and they have no room for you, the invader. Another form of this happens with married couples where the parent brings the child to bed, where the two parents, you know, can't sleep without having the child in the middle, right up to when the child is 44. I mean, it's no. It's called a child-centered family. So you, my friends, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I have reviewed with you some of the unavailables, and I have the reason why people love unavailable people, which I'm going to be bringing you later in the show. Be sure to stay tuned. I'm going to tell you some of the psychological insights that we've had about why you love unavailable people. We have talked about the completely out-of-reach person, which is the one that kind of brings the erotomanic around. That means you have erotic relationships with, erotic meaning sexual, passionate love relationships, with somebody who doesn't even know you exist. So you think about them, you fantasize about them, you know, you may masturbate, you have a whole erotic relationship with this person, but they don't even know you're there. The second one was the committed elsewhere and unshakable. You could be in love with somebody who's married and a real committed married family guy. Clergy, we talked about. Family kind of fits in there. The third is unavailable but can be tempted. And that means they are, they claim they're unavailable, but they're ready. You know, they are susceptible. Then there's the available for fun only, which makes them unavailable for romantic relationships. Then there's available for love only, which also makes them unavailable for romantic relationships. Then there's unavailable psychologically, because they're too involved in their own world and their own problems to be in love with anybody. Unavailable spiritually because they're so spaced out. They got no room for a human. Alcoholics and drug addicts, which have relationships with substances, and so there's no room for you. Careeraholics, which are people who are just into their careers and any partner is got to just fit into their schedule. Then mamaholics, papaholics, parentaholics, and I guess that's it. We're going to take your calls. 212-209-2900. I think we must have triggered some thought. 212-209-2900 is our number. We'd like to talk to you about your knowledge of yourself with unavailable people. And remember, by the end of the program today, I'm going to give you the answer. Why people really love unavailable people. It's not something you're going to expect. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. How are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful.
Hey, you know something? I don't know if today is the day you want to say something about this, but I'm trying to get you from the day you talk about the animals, when you talk about the animal shows.
Well, what about the animals?
I was trying to say that I'm not totally agree with you about animal can't think and animal hack, and they do what you teach them to do. No, because I can tell you a little thing that animals do that I know they think before they do that.
Okay, you tell me.
Okay, we used to live on a street. We got a lot of dogs. Our friends down the road, everybody on that street got a lot of dogs. My dog used to go to the field with us. When we go down the street, those dogs used to whip his butt. And they run them, they chase them. One of those dogs was coming up the street one day. We were playing marbles. And one of my dogs see that dog. He go to the other dogs in the yard and he tell them the dog is coming up. And they both go across the street and thing and pin up that dog and beat him nearly to sickness. And you know something? After that, not one of them would go down the road.
Well, yeah, that's kind of amazing.
So
that's kind of
that?
A group. Yeah, that's right. There was some kind of a communication. Where was this, by the way?
This is in Jamaica.
In Jamaica. So, mm-hmm. So in Jamaica, but you see, in Jamaica, there's a lot of group animal stuff going on. Animals do communicate. I'm not saying they don't communicate, but you are fascinated by how accurate it is. I'm a little familiar with the wild dogs in Jamaica. You know, they have a communication. I mean, they could hunt in packs. They could gather. They could communicate with each other. They could run with fear. You know, I mean, there does seem to be some kind of an almost a common mind. It's almost like they had a big mind.
What I'm saying is that why did he not make nice and just attack that dog? He go to the other dog, and then two other dogs run across the street, so the other dog could never go. Anywhere he go, there was a dog to attack him. And then they just group up on him. That's thinking. That's planning.
Pretty smart, huh?
Yeah, so I said, well, I agree with most of what you say, but that day, I've been trying to get you from that day to tell you.
So glad you called me. What's your name, by the way?
Smiley.
Smiley. Smiley, let me ask you something. Are you in love with somebody?
Oh, I'm a married man. I'm in love with my wife every day more and more.
And what makes you more and more in love with her every day? Do you feel like you have that kind of communication that you don't even have to talk?
Yeah, we don't talk, you know, we're not the talkative type to each other, but, I mean, I can just lie beside her, don't say anything, but in my mind, it's all love all the way.
It's kind of like the dogs.
Yep.
In other words, you have the kind of communication with your wife where you don't have to use words to get there, but the two of you join in a level of harmony, just like the dogs that you admire. There's something, and that's what you see. That's what you picked up on. That's why it means so much to you.
Yeah, and we don't have to keep saying, I love you, I love you. We both know we love each other more than life itself.
And if there was a danger, you wouldn't have to be alerting her too much to come and join you. She'd just be with you every second.
Every second.
Every second. Are you that way?
I die for her any day.
And Smiley, are you that way with your family? No,
I'll
not
say
so
with
good.
My kids,
no.
With my kids and my wife.
But
and
not friends. with your parents and them so much, huh?
No.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice if you could at least have the kind of relationship with your parents that the dogs...
They all died. Can't happen again.
Can't what?
Can't happen again. They all died.
Yeah. It must have been very painful. Were you young when they died?
No. I was big.
You were big. But you weren't very close to them anyway.
I was close to my mother, but none at all to my father. I didn't care about him. He could stay. He was one of those fathers who wasn't there.
He's one of those dogs who came in town that everybody...
Yeah. So you know something? He leave four of us with one woman to care for us. So So I wouldn't like to be a judge on a child case because I'm biased. Every father I would send to jail for the kid. So
that's right. Just like you're saying. I understand. Smiley. Yeah. Smiley, yeah. I'm glad they call you that. Thank you very much for calling in, and I'm glad we straightened it out.
All right. Cool, Ahmad.
Cool.
All right.
Bye-bye. Oh, gosh. Behind every perception, there's a need. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We'll be back with you in a couple of minutes. Let's take a short break.
Hi, I'm Danny Glover, and this is WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
Michael G. Play a little more of that later. That is Jimmy Rushing. I can't understand why you treat me so unkind. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here at WBAI 99.5 FM. By now, everybody's rushing to their phones. Saying, you got to listen to this, you got to listen to this, you got to listen to this, because everybody knows somebody in relationship grief. Yes. What do you think people talk about? They talk about their relationship grief, right? Why is someone happy? Okay. So I guess there's a lot to figure out. I have 6 audio programs available on the internet for free for you on relationships. You could get them by going to my website, thepositivemind.com, and there are 6 about relationships that are really fascinating. You get them through the archives. Listen in. If people are confused, then you could pick one of those programs and email them to somebody, and then they could listen in, you know. But it's all about trying to get information, and from my perspective, I've interviewed thousands of people who have been in the love quagmire. But you get out of it, you see, and then you find that there's a different kind of love relationship you have. And we're going to talk about it in a little bit, in about 10 minutes. I'm going to tell you what I've discovered about people who love unavailable people. And that's what the program was about today. People who fall in love with unavailable people. Why? Just why? Why don't you just go pick somebody who's a good potential? Well, there's reasons. Let's make a call, 212-209-2900. Let's speak to a couple of you today because here is, I just love talking to the folks from BAI. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hello.
Ah, it's from Mars.
Yes, hello.
Yes.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good.
I want to talk about the subject you're speaking about.
Sure.
First of all, my name is Abdella, and I'm a 38-year-old male, and I have this obsession with women that sort of show me no interest, like the ones that
guess what we're talking about.
The ones that show me interest, the ones that call me all the time, I don't want to be bothered with.
That's right. You want the unavailable woman. You want the woman who is strong, who can handle herself, and who is not easily swayed by you. You want the flower at the top of the tree.
Exactly. Exactly. And I send them flowers. I let them know I'm interested. And the more she shows me no interest, the more the harder I try to go after.
And the more it excites you.
Exactly.
Now, what happens when finally you win? What happens when you finally convince one of these ladies?
That's the funny thing about it. As soon as she shows a little interest in me, now I'm not too interested. And then as soon as I know I have her in the bag, now I don't want to be bothered with her.
So there seems to be a part of you that is into what's called quest psychology. Your whole life is about the quest. You search out. It's all about questing. It's about yearning. Now, you see, yearning is its own kind of spirit. Yearning for something is different than having something. Yearning, wanting, aching. You love that because that stretches your muscles. Do you work out in gymnasiums, too?
No, because I work like 13, 14 hours a day. I'm at work now, as a matter of fact.
What do you do, Abdul?
I'm a truck driver.
You're a driver? Okay, well, how about the long haul? How do you handle? Do you do long hauls or short hauls?
No, I do tri-state, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania.
And what's it like? I mean, did you ever have really difficult jobs to do when you're driving a truck?
No, not really.
Really?
It's a challenge, but I love the challenge finding the, when I have somewhere new to have, I have to go. I have to find a new location. I don't know my way, and when I find it, it's like a relief. Oh, here's the place I'm looking for.
Right, and then you're ready to move on once you find it.
Exactly.
Well, it's just like you are with women.
Exactly.
You know, you like driving, you like just finding what's the right territory, how am I going to get through to them? And then once they commit to you, it's kind of a funny thing, you're done. How about married women? Are you attracted to married women?
No, not really. Because I don't want to deal with the repercussions of dealing with the husband.
Yeah, because on the other side, there are the women who fall in love with men who are married, or men who fall in love with women who are married, and then as soon as they become available, as soon as they leave their husbands or wives, they dump their lover.
Yeah, well, I understand that kind of relationship because that you can have a relationship with that person, but they really don't have tabs on you. They really can't say what you can't do because they're in a relationship, a committed relationship, and they can't dictate to you what you can't do because you can say to them, but you're married. How are you going to tell me I can't date someone?
Well, let me ask you, Abdella, yes. In your life, how many long-term committed relationships have you had with people who were finally available?
I'd say about, since I was a kid, about five.
And of the five, which lasted the longest?
The one I had a child with.
The one you had a child with. How long did that last?
About 5 years.
About 5 years. What was the bad news about it?
Bad news about it?
Yeah.
That's, as a matter of fact, she was that type of person. When I met her, we changed numbers. I used to stay at the club all the time. I finally spoke to her. She gave me her number, and I would call her, ask her to go out with me. She would always be busy, come do this with me. She wouldn't be available. And one day she finally gave in. We started hanging out. One thing led to another. We wound up being together. And we wound up being engaged. We wound up being pregnant. Once she had the baby, and she kind of changed on me. Instead of being like the hard one, the hard to get type now, she was more, where you going? Who were you with?
And that's what you don't like, because you don't like to be caged in, right?
Exactly.
You hate to be caged in.
Exactly.
In fact, if we were to say for a matter of fact, for you to be caged in is about the worst thing we could do to a guy. You're a guy who's always got to know that he could get the next truck out of town.
Exactly. And that's exactly, you hit the nail right on the head.
And because of that, we understand something, Abdallah, that you fall in love with unavailable people because you like unavailable relationships, and you're saying, well, why do I like unavailable relationships? And here comes the answer. The reason is because you are unavailable. Yes, this is the secret about most people who like unavailable people. You are the one who's unavailable. You don't want to be available. You don't want to be trapped, tied down, restricted, blamed. So you're the one who's the one you quest for people who are unavailable, and when you get them, when they turn on you, you don't want it anymore.
Exactly. That's exactly the situation.
Yeah.
You hit the nail right on the head once again.
Well, once again, Abdallah, thank you for calling in.
Oh, you're welcome. I listen to your show all the time.
I'm glad I could see myself in the cab of your car.
Yeah, man, I had to pull over so I could concentrate and listen to what you were telling me.
I'm glad you did.
I wanted to tell you, I'm a Greek. I'm Greek. I'm Muslim. I listen to a lot of your topics have to deal with Islam, and I love that about the show. I just love it. I can't find it nowhere else.
Yeah, I'm glad.
And thanks.
Thank you so much.
I'm glad I got through.
Good. Good.
All right.
Bye-bye. 212.
Have a good day.
Yes, I sure will.
All right.
212-209-2900, somewhere there in the trucking world. We have a big trucking contingent. I have heard from many truckers that I'm good truck radio. 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille, let's take another call. Hi. Hello there.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, we have a very bad connection. You sounded like a recorded announcement. No offense.
Uh-huh.
Could you speak a little louder?
Well, yes, this is a recording.
It's not your fault.
No. It's the way the thing works because we're using satellites, plus we're using satellite studios. We're using the Internet. This is an amazing thing. The very fact that you hear my voice is kind of magic. So it is. No wires involved. I mean, my voice goes down to WBAI. They send
The famous wireless. Yeah, which now W Bloomberg. You've heard of that, by the way.
No, sure.
You didn't hear it from me, but anyway, the news is that the most famous same-sex marriage will take place maybe by sundown tonight. It will be W and Bloomberg.
W and Bloomberg. Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Okay. So
listen, thank you for calling in.
I assume that you're probably, maybe you don't know, you're on the list. So, bring large presents or you'll never get. Anyway, in the same direction, what I would like very much to know, first of all, is this alleged number, 209-2900?
Yes.
An actual number?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. The reason is that when I called before, I was told by a recorded announcement that, no, the number that you're calling doesn't exist.
No, it is. Here it is. Anyway, can we get to the point of this? Because I've got to have a number of other callers.
I am sorry with the explanation. All right. It's simply this. The famous Matty.
Yeah, what about it?
Yes. All right. That I was referred to for some Native American information. All right. Is there a number, or snail mail or something, that could get to her? Does she have an extension?
Well, actually, I'll tell you what. I don't know. But if you call 212-209-2800, you could ask them, and they will tell you. Thanks a lot for calling in. 212-209-2900. Let me take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Just have to turn my radio down.
Sure.
Hi.
Hi there.
Well, I appreciate your program today. I can certainly relate to all aspects of what you're talking about. And it seems that I have found many unavailable people in my life, and they all seem to be so much like my mother and father, who were very unavailable.
Well, now I'm going to cut through that to make it even a little. What's your name, by the way?
Jeannie.
How about this? How about the hypothesis
that
people who fall in love with unavailable people are truly unavailable themselves?
So I was just going to say that. What I've discovered is that I'm the one who's unavailable to myself, so I'm looking for it through unavailable people. And I've discovered through a lot of wounding and healing and discovery that I'm afraid to really touch those parts of myself. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
And I tried that. It's almost like a safer way for me to sneak up and see it, so I can't. And actually, any time somebody really came towards me, it scared the hell out of me.
That's exactly like Abdullah was saying.
Yeah, I just wanted to run the other way. And
you
I want to
run the other way. But you see, now, let me ask you this. Are you a private person?
Yeah, very.
And are you artistic?
Yeah.
Are you a painter, I was going to say?
Well, I'm a musician and a poet and an actor. I have all, but my main things are a musician.
And you love silence?
Yeah.
I mean, you love quiet, not noise. You kind of, you don't want to be invaded.
No, I've been so invaded my whole life.
How many forks do you have in your kitchen?
Forks?
Forks.
Too many, I think. I just
moved. Too many for what? Because?
Too many, you know, tableware? I just moved, and I have all these forks, and I don't need them.
You don't need them. How many do you need?
Probably two. I have lots of chopsticks. I have too many of those, too many things I don't like.
Too many chopsticks, too many forks, and you know that there's too many because, you know, you're not a big entertainer. You're not going to bring over a dozen people. You're a private kind of person.
Yeah.
Now, when a private kind of person who happens to be an independent like you, who happens to be artistic like you, you treasure yourself. You treasure your perception, your depth. You know, you treasure that. Somebody comes along and comes into your life, and they yank you out of it. So there's a part of you that part of it is going to be you're going to love somebody and yearn for somebody, but they're out of reach. Now, if there were any way, and this is the idea of the program today, if there were any way that there was a true acknowledgement that you, Jeannie, said to herself, if this is possible now, this is just a theory, but if Jeannie said to herself, you know, no admittance, visitors welcome, but no permanent residence. And if that was okay, Jeannie, for at least a period of time where you knew that about yourself, life would become different.
Really?
Because instead of yearning and questing, you'd feel safe. You'd say, okay, visitors allowed, but I'm not looking for a permanent love relationship. See, you live with the illusion that a permanent love relationship must be in your life.
Yeah, I think so.
You don't need that.
Hmm.
See, and a lot of people don't need it.
Well, obviously I don't need it. I haven't had it.
That's right.
Perfectly capable of living a life without it. But.
Well, Jeannie, there's a good word in there called perfectly.
Yeah.
You are perfectly capable of living a life without it. So it would be nice if it came along.
Mm-hmm.
You remember when cherries on a cake used to be a good thing?
Yeah.
Cherries on a sundae.
Yeah.
It's like the topping, you know? It's like the topping of life. But you have learned to get along through life in a way that makes your life satisfactory.
Well, I'm trying. I mean, I suffer a lot from a lot of past abuse and things. Some days I don't think so, but some days I do.
Yeah, I understand. And I'm sure you're in there getting it going.
Yeah.
But I think the first sign to recognize is that the people who search out the unavailable people are truly unavailable themselves.
Yep, I agree with you. I mean, a few years ago I would have thought that was crazy, but that is so true. It's so true.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it, in a way, a gift because what I like in the other person is part of me that I don't believe I have, but I do.
And what about this one? Let me take this one part of you. What about your anger?
Oh boy.
Oh boy, what?
Oh boy, is it strong?
Yeah.
It could.
It could kill.
I talked to my mother today, and geez, I have to really work. I mean, because I was so annihilated, I'm so good at annihilating.
So you could, when you let it hang out. Now, wouldn't it be nice? Imagine this: if you found a mate who said to you, "All right, you get that angry at me, I'll be able to take it, but I'm not going to suffer with it. I'm going to walk away, and I'll come back as soon as you get over it."
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay with you?
Oh, yeah. I have a twin who says that to me, and I say it to her.
Yeah, that's it. You say to your twin, the two of you and your twin get into screaming matches at each other?
Oh, my God.
I've got to see that.
Oh, my. I mean, because we were safe with each other, so all of the abuse we took out on each other, and through years of work, we've learned to stop it. I mean, we can actually stop it, but it's like a hurricane. It's a force of nature.
Amazing.
But we've learned a lot, but we try not to do that anymore because it's really debilitating. But we try to see it and not indulge in it, I guess.
Someday I want to do a program about twins.
Oh,
about, you know, I mean, there's a whole bunch of information that's available in there
mm-hmm.
to the rest of us, and I'd like you to be one of our teachers.
Oh, I would love to.
I'll make an announcement, okay, Jeannie?
Oh, I would love that.
Sure.
I just have a quick question for
sure.
you. Do you offer private sessions? Are you?
I only do one-time consultations myself.
But do you offer that? Are you available?
Yeah, sure. I see people one time.
Oh, okay. I would love to do that because I really respect a lot of what you say. I get a lot out of your program.
I appreciate that, Jeannie.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
Okay.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Yes. I mean, some of my time is unavailable. I guess that makes me more attractive. 212-209-2900. Let's take another caller.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, hi. This is Lori.
Hello, Lori.
Hi. I can't believe it's so funny to listen to this. I wish I sort of heard this program 10 years ago, but I married a careeraholic.
Sure.
And I definitely can identify myself as being needing my independence.
Absolutely. Just like Jeannie, you are unavailable.
Yeah. But, you know, it's really complicated because I have a daughter now, and I can't not be available.
Oh, sure you can.
Yeah.
I don't know many parents who are available to their children.
Well,
I mean, you know, they're slightly available,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, mostly you find your way of staying, of maintaining your independence. How old is your daughter?
She's 6.
Ah, you're stuck. All right. You're nailed. Now nailed to the crucifix of motherhood.
Yeah. And you I think the postpartum depression was unbelievable, which definitely extended beyond physiologic depression. I think because I was so, the change of life and this responsibility just killed me. You know, I always say it took me 3 years to kind of get over it.
So there's a part of you that had your spirit broken.
Absolutely.
You know, which is great.
Even being married broke my spirit.
Sure.
You know, even though I married somebody who's not, he's still very unavailable.
Thank God.
I think.
Thank God. What if he
is
becomes...
Is it thank God?
Yeah, because, you know, you think about it, if he becomes available, he's going to become a pest.
That's
you
true.
Know what I mean? You could, in your own time, as soon as you're ready for him, he's going to come around.
You think?
When you're ready, he'll appear.
And how do you change this? Because I, as I'm listening to all the callers that are identifying themselves with this, and myself included, but, you know, how do you move to change? Because I always have very good insight, but it's making a big leap from there to
well,
actual
walk
change.
Around. Walk around. This is a good question.
Mm-hmm.
Walk around for a while knowing that you're unavailable.
Mm-hmm.
And do it without shame.
Okay.
And say to yourself, in this universe where everybody has different ways of being, I am a little different. I feel a little aloof. I feel a little separated.
Right.
I don't feel like everybody else because that's the way you are, right?
Right.
And so therefore, I'm going to accept that I'm not the same as everybody and that I'm not really available for a normal, ordinary relationship kind of thing.
Right.
Now, the acceptance of this, the real acceptance of it and settling into it and seeing yourself as kind of, you know, your own kind of goddess, they call it.
Right.
But seeing yourself as that and really believing in. And so when people kind of come towards you and they want more from you, it's all right they want more from you, but it's also all right that you don't want to give it.
Right.
When you accept that, and you really take it as something that's acceptable to you, it begins to melt. Mm-hmm. The position melts.
Yep.
You know? And I could tell you're a meltee. You know, they've already got you. They tricked you. They gave you a daughter.
Yeah.
You know, you're stuck.
I know. She's fantastic. It's been a really good
experience.
She's
old. What's her name?
Ava.
Well, Ava is that kind of a teacher.
She is.
I'm sure. I thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you. That's fantastic advice. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Well, we're going to have to be going. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. What are we going to do? If you want a copy of today's program, which many people are going to want, you call 212-209-2900. You call 212-757-4488. 212-757-4488. I will be back with you on Tuesday. Take a look at the website, thepositivemind.com, my friends. It's really remarkable. Good stuff in there. Back with you on Tuesday with more of this remarkable stuff.
I'm Verna Avery Brown. Here's what's happening in the news. The Democrats are seeking the release of 2,000 memos by U.S. Supreme Court nominee John Roberts that the White House and the archives have refused to release. These are the pages that will give more insight into Roberts' beliefs on civil rights, abortion, and the role of the judiciary. The Washington Post is reporting that one document Democrats are interested in that is being withheld is on the Iran-Contra affair. Roberts wrote a draft memo to his bosses at the Reagan White House regarding the office in which the administration used to sidestep the ban on funding the militias to overthrow the leftist Sandinistas. Meanwhile, the debate over Roberts has extended beyond the walls of Capitol Hill. Leanne Caldwell has more.
Coming out in support of John Roberts in the past 2 days include the group Women for Roberts and a broad coalition of Black and Latino interest groups. They contend that Judge Roberts will uphold the law of the Constitution. Michael Massey is president of Project 21.
And, of course, there's always the argument that he will in some way, any conservative nominee will in some way hurt minorities. I argue that if the court upholds the Constitution, there is no way that a minority can be hurt. Minorities are hurt and diminished when they deviate from that.
And groups that oppose Roberts' nomination include People for the American Way, the Human Rights Campaign, and National Council of La Raza. They are concerned with his conservative views that they say could influence abortion, the Voting Rights Act, and affirmative action. Ralph Neese is president of the American Way.
The American people have to know what's at stake. And if John Roberts does get confirmed, and hopefully he will not, we don't want a situation a year or two or three or four from now when Americans wake up and said, what happened to my reproductive rights and my reproductive health? What happened to laws protecting clean air and clean water? What happened to equal opportunity laws? What happened to religious liberty? If this is going to happen, and I hope it never will, at least we should have an honest, candid debate, a national discussion before a vote on John Roberts.
And that debate will continue until his confirmation hearing in 2 weeks. For Pacifica Headlines, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
The state of Texas is scheduled to execute Frances Newton on September 14th. She was convicted of the 1988 murder of her husband and two children, allegedly to collect a $100,000 life insurance policy. Supporters say the courts should grant Frances Newton another trial based on new evidence. Two Dutch journalists recently interviewed the state prosecutor in charge of Newton's case. In that interview, Assistant District Attorney Roe Wilson contradicted a key piece of evidence that led to Newton's conviction. While prosecutors linked one gun to Newton, it now appears that there was a second gun that was never tested in a crime lab. David Dow of the University of Houston Law Center is one of the attorneys representing Frances Newton. Dow says he's convinced of her innocence because of a lack of physical evidence placing her at the scene of the murders.
That when police arrived at the scene, they did an atomic absorption test on her hands, and there was no gunpowder on her hands. There was no evidence that she had fired a weapon. There was no gunpowder residue on her sweater, which is where, of course, you would expect to find it if somebody was holding a handgun and firing it. The crime scene, we noticed, was bloody because there was a blood trail that went from the spot where Francis's husband Adrian was killed, back into the room where the bodies of the two children were found. What that meant was that either the murder weapon, or more likely the murderer, was covered with blood. Adrian Newton was shot at point-blank range, and there's an entry wound but no exit wound, and so that means that all of the blood and brain matter came back out of that entry wound and got on the weapon and probably got on the shooter as well, and there's a trail that leads from him back to the children. Well, there wasn't any physical evidence at all on Frances Newton. There wasn't anything at all on her clothes. There wasn't anything at all in her car. This is somebody who, by the state's theory, would have had to have killed three people with perfect marksmanship and then completely clean the crime scene in such a way that investigating authorities could find no physical evidence.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.